You are listening to the Mother of All Podcasts.
Each week, we will break down a popular topic revolving around parenting and relate it back to our own lives. We're not parenting experts, but we're living out parenting each day and sharing our experiences along the way.
Welcome back to the Mother of All Podcast. This is one of your hosts, Sam.
And I'm Taylor.
And today we are very excited to have on a special guest, Ashley Poddick with Doing Better Conscious Parenting. So thank you, Ashley, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to hear everything about doing better.
Yes. So for our listeners who have never heard of you or don't follow you on social media, do you mind kind of giving us a little bit of who you are and little glimpses of what we're going to talk about today?
Yes. So I am a mama to four. I have two Earthside sons, 4 and 6. I don't know how that happened. And two heavenly daughters. I am an occupational therapist, a conscious parent coach, a holistic lifestyle coach, and an empathic witnessing practitioner, which is a really fancy way of saying it's a somatic trauma-informed experience of witnessing our inner child. And most of the time when I say inner child, people are like, what is that? And as mamas, we're raising children. As humans, we all have a child within us who is asking to be seen, validated, and who has needs to be met. And so in Doing Better, the company that I created, most parents come to me and they say, how do I get my child to listen, Ashley? How do I get them to stop throwing meltdowns in aisle 5 of Target? And what ends up happening is that before we even begin talking about their children, we start talking about their inner child. And most people say, I don't even know what my inner child is like. And you don't have to have certain memories or a certain, moment. Inner child work is really about your present as it relates to your past. So the things that we get really worked up about in our present has a story to tell, and it's usually from our own childhoods. And so the work that I do in Doing Better is under the guise that the way that we parent our children is influenced by the way we were parented. And so first we're addressing who you are and your triggers and your parenting patterns and forgiving your parenting past, because who hasn't not cried in the bathroom after yelling at their kids? I have, So forgiving ourselves. And then it's understanding who your child is developmentally and setting age-appropriate expectations without all of your limiting beliefs and fears and projections. And then finally, the last piece of the puzzle with what I do is the conscious discipline tools, like all the tools for when your child does X, Y, and Z, so that you are prepared and that you can self-regulate as you help them regulate.
That is so interesting. And I feel like the self-regulating part, that's key, mm-hmm. Because sometimes if you're not, and you can feel it. Like I know when I'm getting dysregulated, when my kid's dysregulated, mm-hmm. and it's a really challenging thing to, and then you imagine like a 4-year-old trying to regulate their own emotions.
It's hard.
Yeah.
So that makes me think about, we had an episode, I'm just going to say last night. So my husband was busy and he wasn't at home at the time. So I was like in the mirage of getting food on the plates for the girls for dinner. And I was making lunches at the same time, because when I have all the food out at the same time, I just make lunches, because if I don't do it, then the lunches for school are not made. So we try to do our very best with self-regulation with our kids. And we always talk about open feelings, having big feelings, all those things. But last night, my daughter would not stop screaming at me, my oldest, because she was just having lots of feelings from school. All the emotion just came rushing in. And so I told her, I said, you know what? I need my space. And right now I said, the kitchen is my space. I want my space. You can go have your feelings in the family room, but I don't want to hear you yelling. You can be sad or you can be mad or whatever you want to do. I just don't want to hear you yelling, because I am very overstimulated. I used those words and I was like, please give me my space. Well, she kept coming in the kitchen and screaming at me still. And I was like, I said, and I'm start crying. I was like, mommy respects your feelings when you're having big feelings. Will you please respect mine? But she's four and she's probably like, I don't give a shit. I'm saying I'm not feeling. But I was like trying so hard. And my husband walked in. I was like, I'm leaving the kitchen. And I just walked out. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, you know, I think you're modeling a lot of really great skills, because most of us, we're not taught emotional regulation. I grew up in a home where it's being dramatic, Ashley. And so what happens when we're the dramatic child? We have to keep escalating our emotions to prove our realness, right? We're just wanting someone to say, hey, I see this is feeling hard for you. Or, you know, my brother or other men are taught to suppress their emotions. In fact, women are taught to suppress their emotions. Don't feel anything that's embarrassing or inconvenient or hard. Just be happy, be the good girl. And I played that role really well. My body got incredibly intelligent at playing that part. And we all do that. There's this thing called attachment theory. We are all wired to be in close proximity to our caregivers in order to get our needs met, right? Our physical and emotional needs. And very early on, unconsciously, we are scanning our environment. I mean, this happens from the moment you get here. What parts of me do my family want that gives me love, acceptance, warmth? Which parts of me does my family not want? Which parts of me gets me side-eye, yelled at, punished? And not like, oops, I slipped up and yelled at my child. We're all imperfect. We will all make mistakes. But consistently and habitually, which parts of me get me punished? Okay, I need to shrink that. And so we learn to grow certain parts of us and shrink certain parts of us. And when we weren't met with empathy, we had parents who didn't validate our emotions or actively invalidated our emotions, we create these limiting beliefs about who we are and how we have to operate. And we accept and claim that as our identity. This is all very unconscious. And then we go on living our life and we wonder, why do we feel so mad when my partner does this? Why do we feel so overwhelmed when my child cries like this? And we think it's about the present moment, but really it's about the attachment lessons that we learned in the past. And this work that I do with the reparenting is a gentle mirror holding that up to yourself to examine those parts of you and those parts that you've had to suppress, those parts that were deemed undesirable by your family. That's the inner child. And she's been hiding in the shadows for so long. And she comes out when we're feeling triggered or emotionally overwhelmed. And so, Sam, you were really doing some super powerful modeling for your daughter of how to communicate your feelings. Because most of us weren't taught those skills. So high five to you, mama.
I may have raised my voice a couple times. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but the whole time I kept standing my ground like, I need space. Give me space.
Isn't it interesting as humans, but I will say especially women, because I can speak to that experience since I identify as one. How do we go as babies from like being babies who we have a need and we cry? I'm hungry, I cry. I need my diaper changed, I cry. To now, is it safe for me to ask for something? Is it safe for me to want help? Is it safe for me to set a boundary? Like, how did we go from this is what I need to what do other people need of me or from me? I feel like it's such a very interesting shift. It's been on my mind a lot lately, as a parent and a mother, of really practicing assertiveness. And I wrote a blog about this this week, where I've been taking small steps to practice assertiveness, like asking for what I want. I asked my husband to stop to get me coffee the other day to our family farm, and it was like 15 minutes out of the way, but it was inconvenient, but I really wanted that coffee. And guess what? I asked for that damn coffee and I felt like a goddamn warrior. I asked, I got it, I drank it. It was so good.
I totally hear you because I have that. I'm the same way. And, you know, even when my husband, Brandon, he'll ask me questions and I can't ever just give him a yes or no to a question. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have to explain myself before I answer the question to him. And he's like, you just give me a yes or a no. Just say yes or no. Why are you always explaining yourself? I'm like, because I feel like I have to explain myself to mm-hmm. you before I answer, you know? And it's, you know, I don't know. But that's really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, you probably, if I had to make a guess, somewhere along the line, your body internalized the idea that you had to explain yourself. Or you had to make sure that everyone else was good or happy. You became hypervigilant to that. And so I wonder if, you know, your body learned to do that as an adaptive skill. And so one thing I tell the clients I work with, you know, they'll say, I don't know why I do this. Or Ashley, I don't want to be a mom who yells anymore. And I'm yelling like, why can't I just stop? My body just takes over and I over-explain or I people please or, you know, I lose it on my kids. The first thing I say is this, you make sense. You make sense. Everything that is symptomatic now for you, that is tricky, that's hard, was once adaptive when you were younger, necessary for your survival in those early years when you were dependent on caregivers to meet your physical, emotional needs. And attachment and emotional needs is just as much a need as food, water, and shelter. And when we don't get that, we learn to shift and adapt as a protective mechanism to survive in our family system.
I wonder if, so Taylor, with you saying that, like you're an older child. Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds like almost like an older child because I have to tell Olivia all the time, you do not need to please everybody.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I don't know. Like my youngest could probably give two flying fucks about anybody's feelings. My oldest, however, to make sure everything is right, everybody's pleased in the moment. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's an older child thing or what, but when you said that, it made me think of how she portrays her personality.
Yeah. I would also say that my daughter is very in tune to like, she always asks people how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Like if she has a classmate that was out sick, she's always really quick to go up to them as soon as they come back and say like, how are you feeling? I hope you're feeling better. Aww. You know, stuff like that. It's really Aww. Sweet. It's really sweet. But like, I don't know, is that just like a personality trait that people have or is it
like based off of how you're raised?
Yeah.
And maybe birth order because we were raised differently by birth order.
The first child has
more attention on them. The second child, maybe third or fourth child, they might not have as much as chickens or four kids. I don't know.
I also feel like maybe the rules change a little bit too. I don't know.
Yeah,
but the more kids we add, the more we're just trying to survive the moment. We're like, okay. So I can't tell if the people who have, you know, multiple kids, if they're really brave or they're just incredibly genius. I'm like, maybe they know something. I don't know. Maybe it does get easier the more kids you have. Like, you have more help. I don't know. Or you're just incredibly outnumbered.
Mm-hmm. To me, being outnumbered overwhelms me. So we're done it, too.
Yeah. My body has carried, as I've mentioned, 4 babies. And I have shut down shop at this point. I'm like, 2 is good. But, you know, it's really funny because my whole life now, I won't say my whole life, I have an identity that I call myself. You know, I have reclaimed some of my initial outline. But a lot of what I do is all about parenting. And it's really funny for a woman who never wanted to be a parent. In fact, I didn't even want to get married. Like I doodled a lot of things in my Lisa Frank notebook. Did you guys have Lisa Frank? Was she like the jam when you were younger?
Yes.
Oh, loved her. I doodled a lot of things in my Lisa Frank notebook. But let me tell you, having babies and getting married was not one of them. And the day that I met my husband, we went on a date. We got sushi. I walk in. He's wearing an Abraham Lincoln Wolverine shirt. I'm like, this ought to be interesting. And we hit it off. Like, I mean, we totally hit it off. I don't really believe in love at first sight, but like we definitely connected. And then he had said to me, I don't know if you're like the chick for me, but I just want to be honest. Someday I want to get married and I want to have kids. And I was thinking, oh, and he lost me. But I like his muscles, so we're going to stick in and see how it goes. And, you know, it's really funny because now here I am and I'm doing parent coaching and I wouldn't trade motherhood, but it wasn't my initial journey that I had mapped out in my mind when I was younger. Did you guys want to be moms? Or was that like on the plan, the radar?
Always.
Always, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Originally, I thought I wanted we were three surprised. Or four kids, but my youngest has tested me. Love her, but we're done.
When we first saw the two pink lines, you know, we were engaged to be married, and everyone, we had went on this trip to Cabo Wabo, Punta Cana, and on the ride to the hotel, they were like, don't drink the Mabo Wabo, whatever, like, because you'll end up pregnant. And we were like, that's bizarre. Well, we drank the Cabo Wabo, whatever it was. And here we are, we end up pregnant. And so I'm like, I see two lines. Do you see two lines? And my husband's crying. He's so happy. I'm thinking my life is over. And it took me some time to get on board with that. But then, you know, we went to 28 weeks pregnant with our daughter Harlow. And by that point, I was so into being her mom. I talked to her all the time. You know how it is to be pregnant. It's like, yeah, your best little bud is with you. Mm-hmm. And I was working in the hospital at the time and on the orthopedic floor. And I'd never been pregnant. Everyone kept telling me I must be experiencing Braxton Hicks. And so I'm like stopping to breathe, and my clients are, my patients are thinking I'm breathing with them. So then they'll stop their walker and they're breathing and we're breathing together. And it turns out I was in labor. And after 16 hours of labor, I ended up back in the hospital, but this time to have a baby. And when we lost her at birth, I was already a mother. However, I knew that I wanted to keep trying eventually. And that's what we did. And I was blessed with two healthy boys. We had home births, and then we had one other girl, Isla, is my youngest. And I just feel like all these souls have just shaped who I am as a mother and a coach. And I just feel really grateful because I think our kids are teachers, you know?
Yeah.
They do teach us a lot.
They do. So you've given us a little bit of background about yourself, and you mentioned that you were working in the hospital. I don't think that you mention that you're an occupational therapist, that was kind of how you got your start and everything like that?
Yeah. So I am an occupational therapist, and I had been working in OT for like, oh gosh, over 10 years. And somewhere along the line, healthcare and I began growing in different directions. It was like a long amicable breakup. And when I decided to leave OT in the traditional healthcare sense, you know, I got a new like haircut like you would do post breakup. I bought myself some flowers. I was like, new transition. I ended up becoming a holistic lifestyle coach. And I was doing wellness things, body assessments and things like that, bringing in my OT knowledge, but just doing it in an untraditional setting. And then as I started, after I had my second son, so my third child, I had decided that I wanted to write, because before I went to school for OT background, I was at Mizzou for journalism. And I was just looking to combine like my mamahoodness and my holistic health and my OT. Like, what could I do? And there was this company called Generation Mindful. Have y'all ever heard of it?
Mm-mm. I have not.
They make play-based tools to teach kids about their emotions. And so the founder of Generation Mindful is a physical therapist. And I'm like, hey, OT, PT, like, we're both holistic minded. We're both mamas. she had connected with me also after the loss of our daughter Harlow. And so like there was a foundation there. And I said to her, I'm gonna write for you someday. And she's like, I'm not looking for a writer. I was like, I know, but we're gonna work together. So long story short, I started writing blog articles for her. And that led to me being the content director, and that led to me being a conscious parent coach. And as I'm coaching all these families, I keep noticing this reoccurring theme of all these tools are out there for our children, but what about us? We can't regulate a dysregulated child if we're dysregulated ourselves. So where does that all stem from? Okay, well, I guess managing our children's emotions and behaviors really starts with managing our emotions and behaviors. And that is when I got into the reparenting work and became an empathic witnessing practitioner. And so that's kind of been the evolution. In my coaching, I bring in my OT background. I have a lot of families who do have kiddos on, you know, the spectrum. We all have a spectrum of sensitivities, right? Sensory sensitivities. And then I get to bring in my holistic lifestyle background, you know, talking to families about what their children eat and how that affects behavior, about their sleep patterns, you know, their movement, all of that different stuff. And then I get to bring in, obviously, my conscious parent coaching and the inner child work. And we talk a lot about behavior management and emotional regulation and, you know, setting limits, empathetic limits and boundaries with our kids. And the main focus here is always maintaining the relationship with self and maintaining the relationship with your child, to teach them through guidance, which is what discipline means. Discipline is the root of disciple, you know, to teach. And so how can we teach our children these lifelong lessons without using shame, blame, and punishment? And that's where I come in to help bridge that gap.
That is awesome. I do love how you are so involved with Generational Mindful. I've never heard of them.
Yeah, so I'm on their website right now. And I'm seeing, so there, some of the little graphics that they have on here are, it looks like, is it similar to the zones of regulation?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm a special education teacher, and we have in the past, and with some of the classes that I've taught, we've done the zones of regulation with the students that are in my classroom because, you know, based on their intellectual ability, you know, a lot of those self-regulation skills need to be worked on. And so we did the zones of regulation. This was probably like 5 years ago, but seeing those colors, I was like, I know what that is. But it was great.
On. Yeah. You know, emotional regulation is so important for ourselves and for our children, because all behavior is communication. And many of the times we're stopping right at the behavior. We're upset that our kid's jumping. We want them to stop attacking their brother. We want to, you know, stop X, Y, and Z from happening. And we can set really firm boundaries. And we can also be really curious. I wonder what is underneath that behavior. If behavior is communication, what are they communicating? Is there a lagging skill? They don't yet have impulse control or ability to problem solve, or they have emotional or sensory overwhelm. What is going on for my kiddo? And then we can meet them with empathy. And that's when we can teach the skill. See, when we use punishment, many times it looks effective in the short term. Your kid stops doing what you want them to do, right? Yet it comes at a cost, which is your relationship. And B, it fails to teach the long-term life skills that we want to teach our children. And so when we use discipline, which is embodying and noticing what we're feeling and regulating ourselves, and then looking at our children's behavior through curiosity and setting boundaries, then we actually get to teach the skills, and they get to learn things, and they get to grow, because a stressed out brain can't learn. And when we feel fearful that we're going to get in trouble or spanked or yelled at or sent alone in isolation, then we have to turn off our learning brain. And then we can't learn those things like emotional regulation or impulse control or creative problem solving or, you know, embracing a growth mindset because we're stuck in survival mode. So that is the focus. I say parenting is a long game and that's what I'm in it for. I'm here to help you have a long-term relationship with your kids and build long-term skills so that they can be a fully thriving adult someday.
Okay.
I think that's fabulous because parenting is hard. So hard. And
it's really hard.
Yeah. Yes. And we don't have the typical village we used to back in, God, even when our parents were kids, like a lot of the times they lived with their grandparents and their grandparents lived with them. I see that sometimes now, but your family lived closer to each other. Sometimes your aunts and uncles all lived on the same street and everybody could help out and help you parent and be assistive. And nowadays, especially females in the world, I feel like we have this expectation in ourselves. I don't know. I can't decide whether it's society or whether it's ourselves making us feel like we need to be like a do-it-all mom.
It's not just being a do-it-all mom, but it's like you have to work. You have to be a parent. You have to make all the meals. You have to do all the things. But then also like even
the mental
like,
load.
The mental load, but even like within the workplace, like setting healthy boundaries, you know, setting healthy boundaries in the workplace, like instead of saying like, no, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. Mm. You know, and it's the same thing at home, you know, like I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this. And eventually it's like, you can't do it anymore.
And well, that's, like stacks on. And that's where I feel like a lot of the times, like when I, in my older jobs, I noticed it affected my parenting style because I didn't ask for help or take a step back. But knowing the boundaries and trying to like change how you think of everything outside of it and how going into things with a positive attitude, a lot of times we come home sometimes exhausted, overwhelmed, overworked, kind of pissed from work. And what do you want to do? A lot of people just want to go home and sit on the couch and either stare at their phone and stare at the TV. And then you have these two, maybe three young kids hopping all around you.
That just want your love. And they've missed you all day.
Yeah.
And it's so hard when everyone is just pulling from you. They're pulling, you know, and you're like on empty before you even realize you're on empty. And that's when we react because we're like, I don't have anything else to give to anyone. Like, I am so tapped out. And then we feel guilty because we want to give and give and give. And it is so hard. I have found one of the most helpful tools for me before is transitions. Okay. One of the best tools is practicing transitions for me. Like if I know that I'm going from work mode to picking up from my kids from school, I'm like, I take a few moments and I take some deep breaths. I maybe repeat a few mantras. Like I can do this. This is not an emergency. Something, I'm a good mom, like whatever it is, I take a few moments to like prep myself. And if I know that a certain transition is typically hard, like when I pick up my kids, I'm exhausted, they're exhausted, they usually can get pretty moody and hangry. And so I think in my head, like, okay, I'm exhausted, I'm picking up my kids, I know that they'll probably, you know, bicker and want food and like, and I just don't have the capacity. So I like visualize that in my head and I practice my coping skill ahead of time. It's called coping ahead. And then when you're in that moment, your nervous system's already primed. Like, oh yeah, we just practiced this. And it just makes it easier to access that skill because honestly, in the moment, I'm so tapped out that I don't have a lot to give or if anything. And so it kind of helps me to take some moments before that extra stimulation is dumped on me because it's just so hard.
I feel like that's really a helpful skill because for me, I feel like whenever I am, and not necessarily from work or anything like that, but just like in general. So like Sam is having her daughter's birthday party this weekend, right? There's going to be a pool there. My husband's not going to be able to go. And so like, it's Wednesday. The party's not for another 3 days. And I'm already like stressing out about it, going to this party with two kids who are under the age of five, and my husband's not going to be there. And I mentioned it to Sam before we started recording tonight, and she was like, well, here's all these things that are also going to be there. And so, like, I think me being able to talk about it to somebody and then them help me, like, to see that, you know, there are, it's not going to be that bad, but also here are some things that you should know before you go there. But also for myself, like, I need to think of, like, what are some things that I can do to prepare myself in a more positive way instead of thinking like all doom and gloom. Right. So I think that that would be really helpful. But
hey, everyone. So if you haven't already heard, Taylor and I are affiliates for the Go Guarded company. The way I learned about them is because I am a runner and I love anything that I can make me feel comfortable on my run. So Jody Fisher is fabulous. We had an episode with her previously. She talks about the company and all the wonderful products that she has for anybody who's a runner, likes to be active, out, hiking, walking across campuses, walking to your car, any way to keep females and males safe in any instance. So go ahead and go to our show notes, click the link, use the code MOTHER in all caps. So that's mother in all caps for 10% off. And you will love this. I promise. I promise. You'll love it.
And yeah, with Tay, like how you kind of like, I could tell you're stressing, but also know each other real well. So I knew when you brought up like, you're like, Brandon's not going. And I was like, I lined out like, hey, well, my parents will be there. They don't have their own kids to worry about. My in-laws will be there. No kids to worry about. See, we just got to think of positive things. Good. And it'll be fun.
Yeah, it's really interesting because just like our kids, when they know what to expect, they feel safe. I feel like it's the same with me. Like when I know what to expect, it's safe. And I swear I repeat this to me all the time, like to myself. This is not an emergency. It feels like an emergency in this moment. Like I could feel like my body might want to panic. And my kids will always look at me because I feel like I'm always talking to myself and like shaking out my body and my emotions. And they're just always looking at me. They're like, okay, what's mom doing now? I'm like, you guys want to shake? Let's shake out our emotions.
I feel like that would go really well in my house because my kids love to dance.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
And they would love that. Yeah.
It is. It's fun. And moving, you know, their bodies, they are moving their emotions and it does, you know, it's a body break. If you think of it, even from a sensory perspective, it's a sensory body break. So it does help to regulate and it helps to buffer those big emotions and, you know, that tend to stack throughout the day and then come out. Plus it's fun. Who doesn't like to move their body?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
I'm not shaking my ass like I used to, you know, before kids as much, but I'm still moving.
My daughter, my youngest, loves to like, she does this silly thing where she like flaps her elbows out. But then she like goes in a circle, but like pops her butt out. Oh, it's the funniest thing ever. I swear from the moment she could walk till now and she's three and the movements have not changed, but like watching it from like age one to now is still so funny. She's just gotten more coordinated doing it.
That's so cute. That's so cute.
So regarding the, oh my gosh, where was my question? Okay. So regarding your like doing better conscious parenting. So if someone signed up for you or signed up like to work with you, what would that entail? Like how much time would they get to work with you? Is it one-on-one, like they can text or call you, or is it Zoom meetings, or how would that work?
Yeah. So the first thing I offer is a 1-hour assessment. It's called an assessment, but essentially it's just like an hour to really dive into like what's going well for you. What are your challenges? You leave with some parenting tools. It's really for parents who are stuck in a tricky phase or are familiar with conscious parenting and need a little fine tuning, or people who just want to see what this is all about. And they're like, I just know I need some help, some parenting tools. So we that's a place to start. I also offer a free consultation. And then my package is, it's a 3-month program, essentially, but it's one-on-one. And within those 3 months, you get 9 one-on-one coaching sessions. Each session is an hour. And in addition to that, there's a closed Facebook group that you can be a part of, and then Voxer support. And are you familiar with Voxer, either of you? I wasn't either. It's kind of like a Marco Polo, essentially, like you can walkie-talkie. I don't really know much about Marco Polo, but somebody once said, is that like Marco Polo? And I said, I don't know, maybe.
I am so out of touch. I feel old.
I'm not very cool with technology. I mean, my husband just before Zoom, he's like, you know, you can blur your background on Zoom. And I was like, whoa. So I'm so not good at it. But my 3-month program, you get the 9 1-hour private sessions. And then there's an integration week in each month. And then the Voxer support is where you can either walkie-talkie me or type me a question. You could type me, hey, I'm really struggling with this, or what do you think about this, or share a win. Like, I just rocked this. And I'm back to you within 24 hours on business days. And so it's a lot of support, because I feel like kind of going back to it takes a village. Well, where is the village, you know? And the one-on-one coaching sessions are great to really work through your patterns and understanding your child and giving you tools for whatever you're struggling with in that moment, whether it's sibling rivalry or not listening or potty learning or whatever it is. But that Voxer support is so great, because how many times are we in the moment? I mean, you two have each other, which is super cool. But and also, how many times are we in the moment where we're like, I just want to know like what I could do here, or I just want someone to like let me know we're going to get through this tricky phase, that I'm a good mom with a good kid. Like, how often in the moment do we wish we had someone? And so that's why it was important to me to offer that in the Doing Better 3-month package, because it's hard to parent. And I wanted to help people feel a little less alone and to know that you're the exact parent for the job. Anytime a coach tells you, you need to work with me because I know things, they're distracting you from a very pivotal truth that you are the exact parent for the job. You have the tools inside of you. I'm just here as the guide by the side to offer, to plant little seedlings, to offer some tools. But the true parenting wisdom is a deep knowing within you. And if you don't know what that knowing is, then I hope you find it, because your kids chose you, and you're a good mom already as you are. So that is a lie I will not sell you, is that you don't need anyone to make you a good parent, because that would imply that you're not already. So
I like that a lot.
I also like that. Yeah.
And I like the word that I like that you said, good kid and good parent, because we're reading it for our book club.
We've been reading it since January.
Yes.
obviously
mom life. But it is by Dr. Becky, the child psychiatrist. And I think it is called
Good Inside.
Good Inside. And it's awesome. And it talks about like your kids are always good. You're so good parents, stuff like that. It's so good. But the other day, because I use the word good kid a lot with my kids, like I will say, you did a bad thing, but you're still a good kid. And the other day, my youngest, hence why I say she doesn't give a fuck, because she looked me straight in the face, and I was in the kitchen and she was in her little table sitting there eating her food. And I said something or did something that she did not approve of. And she said, you're a bad mom. And like, I looked at her, I said, excuse me, that made me really sad. And she goes, you're a good mom. It's okay. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, oh my God. Cause I always use the words like, you did a bad thing, but you're still a good kid. It is okay. Like, we make mistakes. Mommy always loves you. Even when we make mistakes, you can always come to talk to me, even if you made a mistake. But yeah, when she said, I was like, shut to the heart, man.
You know, the saying we have is, like, I'll be like, you know, the good thing about mistakes, boys. And they're like, They help us learn and grow, and you know, and they say, you know, like, oh, mom, here you are again. It's probably because, as we talked about before we started recording, like, Sam, I think it was you. You're like, I overtalk. Well, that's probably me too. As you probably can tell from this podcast episode. But it is a really important thing. I do believe the, I want to tell you a little story. My son, my oldest son, he just turned 6. And my boys are super into like treasures, you know, it could be a rock, it could be whatever, all sorts of things. And we were at my mother and father-in-law's house, and my son found a treasure, and apparently it was a diamond earring. And he pocketed it. And when I went to wash his clothes that night, he was like, Mom, give me my pants. I just want to hold my dirty shorts. And I'm like, that seems weird. Something's going on here. I'm like, what's in your pocket? And so he takes out the thing and he's like, I found a treasure. I'm like, that treasure is grandma's earring. And so we had a conversation about, obviously, about taking things that don't belong to you. But also, I was like, so you made a mistake. You're still a good kid. And what are you learning? And how are you learning and growing from this? And, you know, he was like, I need to ask before I just take things. And I said, yeah. So when we make a mistake, we have a job to learn from it. And we have a job to repair when we need to. So how are you going to repair? And he's like, I guess I'll call grandma. And he was so nervous. He was like mouthing the words, but he couldn't say it out loud. He was like, you know, just saying it. Just mouthing it. And she's like, are you here? I can't hear you. And then, and he's just mouthing the words. It didn't, you know, but eventually he did. And he did that really hard thing. And that is what I mean about teaching your kids. Like, I could have punished him and shamed him, but instead we worked through it and he learned a really valuable skill. And I think it's going to stick with him because he was scared shitless to have that conversation. You know, I think it's going to stick.
I was going to say, he did find a good treasure. It's a real treasure.
It's a real good treasure. Yeah.
It's a real treasure.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so do you have any advice for anyone? So like, I feel like that's such a hard thing to teach. Like those skills, like, because I feel like, you know, going to time out, you know, being punished for, you know, making, you know, mistakes and stuff like that. I feel like that's pretty, it's pretty common. Yeah. So how, like, what are some tips that you would give to somebody who is trying to not have those punishments? But it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. First, I would just recognize that it is hard. And most of the time we are teaching our kids skills that we weren't taught. So it is really tricky. I would say the first step is always your self-regulation, noticing your internal climate. Like, okay, am I really angry right now? Like in the example of my son taking the earring, I was like, okay, before I even open my mouth to say anything to him, what am I feeling? Am I feeling like pissed? Am I feeling, you know, embarrassed? Am I feeling like, what is it that I'm feeling? And I just notice where it is in my body. And then I notice my thoughts. What am I thinking about myself? What am I thinking about myself that my kid took this earring? I'm thinking, am I thinking I'm a bad mom? Am I thinking that I need to teach a lesson? What am I thinking about myself? Am I thinking that I can't do anything? What am I thinking? But what am I thinking also about my kid? Am I thinking he's a bad kid? Am I thinking, oh shit, I'm raising a thief? Am my fears and projections, are they going? So I first notice what I'm feeling in my body, and then I notice my thoughts. What are my thoughts about myself, and what are my thoughts about my kid? And when I notice that, I can then say, is that true? Is it true that I'm really a bad mom because my 6-year-old took something? No. Is it true that I'm raising a kid who's, you know, a psychopath thief? No. Okay. Well, I can let that go, because a lot of times we're parenting from our fears and projections, and we think, holy shit, if I don't get control of this situation of this kid right now, oh, he's going to grow up to be this or this, you know? And that's not accurate. Those are fears and projections. And so I'm always starting there because here's the thing. I believe that our kids are good. And when they do quote unquote bad or make a mistake, then there's a gap between who they are and what they do. And so if there's a gap between who they are, this is where I can come in with curiosity, because I'm not willing to believe that my kid is bad because he did bad. So I start there, which is noticing how I feel and noticing my thoughts and asking myself if this is true. And then I ask myself, what skill am I trying to teach and how can I best teach it? Is sending my kid alone in his room to think about what he did, is that going to teach the skill? Probably not. Most of the time, when we leave our kids alone in isolation with their feelings, they're either thinking how unfair it is or they're consumed by their aloneness and isolation. And so they can't access that higher part of the brain.
That makes me think. So I don't send my kids to their rooms when we're upset or when we're having a little spat. But my oldest, she will bring herself to her room and slam her door. And I can hear her talking to herself out loud about the situation. And I'm the mom. I stand outside the door because I want to hear what she's saying. And there's been a couple of times where I've heard her say, like, I am bad. Stuff like that. And I've never said, like, go to your room. It's more of like, she does that spur of the moment. She goes to her room to cool off. But then when she's in her room, she talks to herself. And so I opened the door, which one, she was mad that I bothered her privacy while she was having her time. But I opened her door and I was like, I heard what you said. Because I didn't want her in there, like, just downing herself. Like,
sure.
I felt like,
keep in mind, Sam's daughter is four.
She's four.
She's four. My daughter does the same thing, Sam. She did it tonight.
So bad.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell
like
you about
an invasion of privacy, listening to them while they're in the room, because you're like, I want to know what they're saying. But at the same time, she's in her room talking shit on herself.
Yeah. You know what I do? Because I felt like at age four, my kid, my son, he's now six, but at age four, it was like a switch flipped. And I was like, what is happening? Like all of a sudden, like where he used to let me kind of come and connect with him, he was doing the same thing, shutting the door, go away. I'm like, well, what the hell do I do now? You know, like I'm supposed to show him his big feelings aren't contagious and I'm supposed to be in the room, but he's asking for the boundary of space. What do I do? And, you know, one thing that I started doing is I would knock on the door and say, you know, can I come in? And if he would say no, I'd say, well, then I'm here for you. You are not alone. I will sit outside this door. And sometimes I would write a little note and maybe it would just say like heart or, you know, for
maybe
can't necessarily
read,
yeah. But I might draw a heart or a smiley face and just slide it under the door. And there have been times my son has crumbled it back and slid it. And that's okay. The bid for connection is still there. But then there's been other times where I hear him scribble, you know, like a heart back and slide it in. And so in a moment of calm, you may choose to explore that with your daughter. Like storytelling is really powerful because it integrates both sides of their brain. And when we storytell and create a coherent experience with our kids, it changes the structure of their brain. And it helps them make sense of it. So when you spilled the milk and you ran to your room and shut the door, I'm going to guess that probably felt pretty hard for you. Or maybe you felt embarrassed. Is that true? You know, what were you feeling? What feelings did you feel? What thoughts were you thinking about yourself? I do the same thing with my kids as I do with myself in that beginning part. And I'm not saying that your four-year-old will have a profound answer to start. But as you start to do it, you're essentially planting the seed to them that they have feelings, they live inside them, and they have thoughts that affect their behavior. And you can then begin to rework some of that self-talk, you know, and practice it and model it, you know, in moments of calm and regulation so that she can maybe access that during dysregulation. But is back to Taylor's original question, it is really hard because we want to teach the lesson and we feel that we have to control the situation and manage it. Just based upon child development, that's not the way they learn best. And so I also tried to keep in mind development. when you look at the brain, it's not fully developed until 25. So it makes sense that my kids are going to make a lot of mistakes. It makes sense that they're going to struggle with impulse control. That's kind of their job, is to feel their feelings and make mistakes. And my job is to teach them skills on how, what to do with all those feelings and how to learn from those mistakes. And so I've gotten crafty at just pausing and asking myself, like, what am I trying to teach and how do I best teach that here? And in the case of the ring, shaming him, embarrassing him, yelling at him, that wasn't going to teach him anything. It was just going to provoke fear and more shame. So I said, you know, we talked about it. Like, here's why taking things and not asking, why it's not a desired behavior. It doesn't help you be your best version of yourself. Here are the potential consequences of doing that. You know, grandma may not feel safe with you being around her stuff. As you get older, people will go to jail for that. Like, having just conversations and then giving him a tool. And so next time you have that voice that says, ooh, this is shiny, I want to put it in my pocket, you can talk to that voice and say, hey, I hear you. What am I going to do here? What will help me be the best version? So whatever tool you think will help them in that moment, that's what you teach them. And so that way, next time they have that voice that says, you know, I want that thing, they're like, oh, wait, mama's, we talked about this and she gave me a tool. Just like when my kids want my attention, you can keep yelling at your kids, quit jumping on the couch, quit doing this. But when you start to get curious, like, I wonder what's underneath that. You know what? I think they're wanting more mama time. But your kid doesn't know how to ask for mama time. So I teach my kid to tap on my elbow and say, I want mama time. And all of a sudden, the jumping on the couch goes away, because that wasn't the original issue. It was that they wanted your attention and didn't know how to ask for it. So, you know, I don't know if that's kind of landing, but when we get really curious about what's underneath the behavior, then we can actually teach the skill, so that they don't have to keep escalating to these big behaviors.
I like that. My girls say the same thing. They say, they either say, I want mama time, or they say, I need mommy snuggles.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then that's like my knowledge to like drop what I'm doing. And then they get their one-on-one time. But my youngest now is like, if my oldest says it, my youngest will say, she's my mommy, I now share with you.
Oh.
And I'm like, we do share.
That sibling rivalry is tricky.
It's very hard, but my girls get along very, like, so I use the phrase, like, if they're fighting, I'll say, why are we fighting? And then they'll talk to me about it. And then I'll say, and why do we not fight? And they'll say, cause we're best friends.
Oh.
But they're like, my youngest will go to her 50 to 60% of the time when she's upset over my husband and I. And she will say, I just need sissy. And she'll walk in the room and she'll be sobbing. And my oldest will like embrace her in a very big hug and tell her it's going to be okay. It's like this most precious thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Because I've tried to get them to understand, like, you two will have each other forever. Like, you're only 16 months apart. You're going to go through life together. Friends might not always be there. So I've been trying to work really hard on that, even at a young age.
That's so sweet. That is super sweet.
It's hard because half the time they're screaming at each other, taking stuff out of their hands. But yeah, it's hard.
We started doing special time where we each made a chart. So my oldest and I made a chart, and my youngest and I made a chart, and it just is their name and the days of the week down the side. And this isn't a bribe or a punishment. It's not like taken away or anything like that. They can count on it happening. And it's because research says the number one way to like increase the peace in your home and decrease sibling rivalry is by offering child-led play. 10 minutes if you got it, if not, 5 is doable too. And 5 minutes every day is just me and my oldest time, and then me and my youngest time. And then we put a sticker on the date. And what happens, and why this is cool, is because our kids are connection sucks. At least, I mean, mine are. It doesn't matter if I give them all the connection and time in the world, they want more, right? And kids also like something that's really concrete and tangible. So after a week of doing this, my kids are like, we spend a lot of time together, don't we? And I'm like, yeah. But also they quit competing for my time and attention because they know that they can count on that time and they can see it and they can feel it and they can set the timer. And it's just been really sweet. And it's helped with some of that, like, she's my mom. No, she's my mom.
I like that.
Yeah, it's been a really effective thing for us. So, but sibling rivalry is tricky.
That might be a topic for another episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like that.
So before we end, I do have another question for you about some of the resources available on your website. So your website is parentsdoingbetter.com. And looking through there, you have a ton of information on there, like how to get connected with you. But there's also some free resources. Can you explain those a little bit?
Yeah. So one of the things that I have on there is a trigger worksheet, and that is a very granular way to notice like something that felt overwhelming for you in that day and to break it down. Like, what was I thinking? What was I feeling? What goal had I set for my child in that moment? And like, how do I cancel that goal and set a new goal for myself? And usually parents are like, wait, what? My goal is a really good goal. I don't want my child to be, you know, stripping in Target. You know, my kid did that once. He wanted to put on his new underwear. Like, what do I do? So it just walks you through that process. And that is reparenting work. Like, that is the surface level reparenting work. And I invite people to do that worksheet at least once a week and start to notice a pattern. And it really helps us feel empowered as parents, because we are the sturdy leaders and our kids are looking to us for direction. And when we can understand what's going to make us tick and create some tools around that for ourselves to regulate, then we can better co-regulate with them. And so the trigger worksheet is there. I think I have scripted stories on there. Scripted stories is a great resource if you are experiencing anything that's new, challenging, like a new sibling, change of school, parents divorce. And the concept behind this is that you create a story with your child around whatever's happening. And Daniel Siegel, if you ever read Whole Brain Child or No Drama Discipline, I'd add it to the book club. He talks about using storytelling to integrate both sides of your brain so that it makes a story for your kids. And when you can integrate both sides of the brain, then they can process those big emotions and build resilience. So that is a tool for how to do that. It's a fun, playful thing to do with your kids. And then I have, what else do I have on there? I think I also have a ebook on there, which is it takes you a little bit more in depth to some of that self-regulation and inner child work and what to do when you're having an adult meltdown so that you can tend to your child's meltdown.
Okay.
I love that you provide free resources.
Yes, thank you. I plan to keep adding to the free resources. I think it's important that information is just out there for us parents. And then, you know, if somebody wants to work one-on-one or dive deeper, that's what I'm here for.
You even do workshops and mom talks.
Mm-hmm. So mom talks is a free event. Sometimes I do them locally here in St. Louis. And then sometimes they're virtual. And this is just like very casual conversations where moms get together and we talk about motherhood. You can ask me questions as a parent coach, but really I'm there as a mama too. And so we did one at JB Wellness. If you're anyone's familiar with that?
Yeah.
My friend Brittany owns JB.
Yeah. So Brittany and her mom and some of us moms, we were sitting there eating acai bowls and we're talking about motherhood and we're just connecting and they're asking me questions and they're asking each other questions. And so many of us have the similar pain points as parent, you know, in parenting. And we walked out with some more tools, but a lot more connection. And that's what doing better is about. I believe that we all want to do a little better than we did 5 days ago, 5 minutes ago. And maybe even doing better than what we received, and that's not shaming our parents, grandparents. That's a sign of our evolution. I hope my boys do a little better than me. And so that's where doing better came from. And it's to create a village again, because we're so many of us are parenting alone, and that's hard. So Mom Talks was a way for me to bring the community back to motherhood.
I wonder if we should offer something like that to our listeners, Tay, like a Zoom Mom Talk, and we could pick a date.
Oh, that could be cool.
That would
How
be
often
so
do
fun.
You do them?
This is my first virtual one. I'd like to do one at least once a month, but I would even do maybe bi-weekly, you know, so two a month. That could be fun. We could talk about getting a date on the books, and it's a really good time, and it's nice to connect with other mothers.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
I agree.
Before we end tonight, which I feel like you've said this probably a lot already, but if you could reach any mom out there or any parent out there that is struggling with, you know, parenting, conscious parenting, what would you say to them?
I would say to these parents that you're not alone. You are the exact parent for the job, and your children don't need your perfection. That's a sold lie, like that we need to be perfect or be doing more to be enough. You are the exact parent for the job, and you are more than enough. You're more than qualified, and you are a good parent with a good kid. And your kids need to see your entire humanness. That means making mistakes, feeling feelings, because that gives them permission to be real humans too. And so give yourself some grace and know that you're already doing a good job, even on those tricky moments when you don't feel like it. And what I tell everyone is remember that you make sense. Everything that you do, everything your child does has a story to tell. And, you know, you can lean in and get curious, and the story will unfold itself. So
I love that.
Me too.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Ashley. We absolutely have enjoyed having you as a guest, and hope to have you on in the future.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.
To all of our listeners, you can find Ashley at www.parentsdoingbetter.com, or she is on Instagram at Ashley_Poddick_parentcoach. And then Facebook. She has a FP Facebook support group as well. So check her out, and we hope to hear how you've enjoyed this episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mother of All Podcasts. Our podcast is recorded and edited by Sam and Taylor using Spotify for Podcasters. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to our show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you really liked us, you can find us online for more information at www.motherofallpodcast.com or on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And we will see you next week.